You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
I love the smell of movies in the morning.
It's B-movies thanks to Metze Bar, your source for all things NZIFF, thanks to the best place to go before or after.
And we've got Ann Timpson in the studio. Kia ora, how are you?
Kia ora, Rachel, how are you going?
Good, it's very exciting to have you up here. You have your own movie, which we're going to speak about in the film festival, called Come to Daddy, which you've directed. But you're also the curator or the programmer for the Incredibly Strange section in the movie, in the film festival.
I am. So, it sounds very nepotistic, doesn't it?
No, it sounds fantastic is what it sounds like. Let's talk about Come to Daddy first, because what a title, first of all. And what a cast as well. There's Elijah Wood, Stephen McHattie and Madeline Sami as well. So quite a sort of mix of names people will know there. So what can you tell us about? Because I feel like I'm going to do a much worse job of trying to get the plot of this right than you will. What's the gist of this film?
I'll probably give it a terrible one as well. Really simply, because it's one of those films that, and you know, these days I think it's so rare to be surprised by movies. So, mm-hmm. so the scriptwriter and I really wanted to make one of those films that just feels like you don't know where it's going to go, what's going to happen. So in saying that, it's really a very simple story about a reunion between a father and a son, mm-hmm. A son who gets a cryptic letter from his father to come visit him after 30 years. The only hiccup is that the house is in a very isolated region right by the coast, away from many, many people. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the setup. And then he arrives and the dad isn't, he's reaching out to him. He's not everything that he obviously wanted after 30 years. And then it goes a little bit dark and a little bit funny and a little bit crazy.
I like that everybody sort of, who I've spoken to, who's either seen this or went, the things I've read about it, it's very unpredictable. It does a lot of things that you sort of think it's going one way and then it veers another way. How do you sort of make a movie weird? That sounds like a weird question in many ways, but how do you go, okay, this is the plot? Because as you're saying, it's a simple plot in many ways. There's a you know, reunion between a father and son. How do you go, this is the way I want to freak everyone out, this is how I want to make a movie strange?
It's a love letter to my dad and the types of film that I watched with him growing up. So there's a lot of sort of influence from the 70s, gritty thrillers with really sort of, I always remember like really memorable characters in those films that sort of pop up.
Yeah.
So we kind of wanted a film that has that sort of power. And they were kind of films that I love that had, you know, starred also like Walter Matthau and people like that, Alec mm-hmm. Gould, that were kind of really dark when they needed it to be, but also had moments of levity mixed in with there. And it was a real sort of high wire balancing act to get the tone right. Mm-hmm. So we just spent a long time making sure that we did that high wire act without falling into the crevice.
Yeah.
I think we might have pulled it off. I'm not sure. But yeah, it seems to be working really well for people. But yeah, the idea, like, you don't want to be one step ahead of the filmmakers or the script writer in a way. Like, it's so hard to these days to surprise people because everyone's trying to think mm-hmm. ahead of the game instead of just like sit back, relax, you know. You're in the back seat. Yeah. You've got a driver who might be under the influence, but don't worry. We'll get you to the destination. But just don't try and climb into the front seat.
The movie destination. So for fans of sort of weird 70s kind of esoteric-y, strange sort of movies, might be a place to start if you're thinking this sounds like you. It's playing at the Civic Theatre and the Hollywood Avondale, two of my favourite theatres in the programme of places that you can go and watch movies. It's on July the 26th, that's a Friday at 9:15 p.m, and July the 31st, which is a Wednesday, so you can really freak yourself out in the middle of the week as well.
Yeah, I should say, I mean, it is a comedy and it's a thriller, so it's like, I mean, if you like Fargo, that sort of thing, it's that.
Fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about the Incredibly Strange section in the film festival. This is an incredible lineup of movies, documentaries. There's some sort of more narrative films as well.
Yes.
How do you go about picking an incredibly strange program for a film festival?
Well, Rachel, after 25 years, it's the 25th anniversary. You'd hope I knew what I was doing.
I would
to
say
be honest.
So. Yeah.
But every year, it's kind of reinventing the wheel. It's just really choosing films that I connected with over the past 8 months or so that I might have seen at festivals or been given a heads up or been completely surprised. But I've always had this thing about, like, is it a film that I want to watch with an audience?
Mm-hmm.
And whether they're fully, truly successful. And, you know, no one's ever going to say these are all masterpieces, you know, unless you are writing the reviews. But but I tend to think, like, I just want them to be something that maybe they'll be discussion-led films, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I'm curious about your process. Do you seek out looking for incredibly strange films, or do the incredibly strange come to you?
Yeah, like,
you're just a magnet for the weird and wonderful.
Are you constantly watching and being like, you know what?
I am the Dalai Lama of strange films.
Of weird
yes.
movies.
No, I mean, they do come to me. They come to me via, like, whether I've got a connection with the filmmaker mm-hmm. or a relationship with the distributor or sales agent. So in some ways, that been doing it for so long, you do suddenly get to have the ability to access material really quickly and check out what's happening in the scene. These days, like, there's so much overhype about everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
just constantly, because the attention spans are so small, you've got to either be the biggest or the greatest or the craziest.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's really fine checking things out for yourself, diluting it and just filtering it through.
Totally,
but it is very curatorial. It is. I just think it's just things that I like, and it's obviously not going to work for
everyone. It's a good place to start, though, isn't it? With anything, really.
Yeah, I love how we're at the back of the guide, with the naughty kids still after all these years.
The classified section.
There's just the classifieds behind us. So,
exactly. I'm really interested in one movie in particular that's really stood out for me. We've talked about You Don't Know Me up on the show already, the Showgirls documentary that's been getting quite a bit of hype as well. But one that's really stuck out to me is the Amazing Jonathan documentary. The brief synopsis says here, in the world of magic, nothing is what it seems as terminally ill magician prepares for his swan song and the ultimate trick on the maker of this bizarre documentary. So this is by Ben Berman. What can you tell us about this movie? Because, again, this is one that sort of defies an easy summary in many ways.
There's a new breed of documentary, and you know, New Zealand's Tickled is one of those.
True,
where they're a doc that starts off one way and then takes a big chicane and turns where the audience doesn't expect. So it's in that mould. But, you know, Jonathan, the actual magician, was someone that I kind of grew up with watching as well. So I knew the guy really well.
Mm.
Not personally, but I knew his
knew
performance
his content,
and his and so I knew that he'd got sick and I knew he was a wild man, a druggy and partier, like he was a big personality.
Mm.
And so I was really curious to see the doc, and then I actually just saw it really blind. I didn't know. I just knew the title, and that was it. And so that's the best way to see this film. It's like, really go. Don't read up on it. Don't watch the trailer.
Yeah,
just go. And
go
it's
in.
And it's one of those ones that just keeps escalating as you go through it. And it's one of those, the director is actually part of the story, a huge part of the story, and it just starts becoming like a meta observation on the making of documentaries as much as the subject matter. Plus, he's a magician. Is like, is this whole thing one big giant con?
Yeah,
because he's kind of brilliant as well. It's really fun.
I think you totally hit it on the head there as well. Though, a movie that just keeps taking turns. I found that with David Farrier's Tickled. I went to watch that in the cinema, and I didn't really know that much about it. I knew it was going to be a bit weird. But even people in the cinema who knew even less about it than us were these older women behind us who'd come to see Sing Street, the lovely, charming Irish sort of like musical movie, and walked into the wrong cinema and just stayed for the duration. And by the end of it, they just their mouths were just completely open. It was kind of incredible. But they stuck it out, you know, so fair play to them. Very different tone of a movie. So there's a really great program going on here. We've got the Amazing Jonathan documentary. There's also Deerskin, about a man who sort of falls obsessively in love with his deerskin jacket. There's The Hole in the Ground, Knife and Heart, Vivarium, Violence Voyager, Mope, Coco D, Coco Da, and You Don't Know Me, which we've spoken about on the show.
Yeah, Vivarium director, and that's the film with Jesse Eisenberg and Imogen Poots, is nearly sold out. So it's like, if people want to see that. And the director's coming, and I'm just hung out with him actually overseas. He's a really fun dude, so we're going to have a really good Q&A hopefully.
Oh, cool.
And then the other film I just want to highlight is Coco D, Coco Da, which is a mind-melting movie that's really kind of surprisingly emotionally heartfelt as well, but you'll be terrified at the same time. It's unlike anything I've seen, and it's, if you like the great work of David Lynch, I think you're going to really
enjoy this
film. Yeah.
Well, that sounds fantastic. Thank you very much, Ann Timpson, for coming in this morning. And don't forget your own movie as well. Come to Daddy. People can go and see that as well. All the details for all of these films are on the NZIFF website, and you can find all of the Incredibly Strange movies under their own special little category as well. It's all nice and easy for you. We're going to play some Les Baxter, which is what you suggested. Coffee Bean, that's the one we've got this morning for you.
Classic.
You're listening to 95BFM Breakfast. This is Les Baxter, Coffee Bean, Calabash Annie. Thanks to Ant Timpson for chatting to us about all the incredibly strange movies happening at the NZIFF at the moment. His own movie, Come to Daddy, is on July the 26th and July the 31st at the Civic Theatre in Hollywood Avondale, respectively. And you can find all of the other movies programmed under Incredibly Strange on the NZIFF website as well. There's some real interesting gems in there, so get Googling. You're listening to 95BFM Breakfast, and we're still talking movies. Now Penny's here. Kia ora, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
2 days in a row, what a treat for us.
I know, your film festival calendar's been busy, hasn't it?
Chock-a-block. Yes. Well, actually not as full-on as others that I've talked to in reception.
Some people go hundies on the film fest, like they have like 25 movies and they have to sort life around their movie calendar and stuff. Insane. Very impressive.
I saw Amanda Jane Robinson's ticket stack pile thing.
Just like a huge,
wow.
Well done. Very well done.
I used to do that. I just can't do it. My brain's too full.
Too much info in there already.
It's funny to think about that.
I'd forget like how to get dressed in the morning if I kept going to movies all the time.
You just have to go to bed and what you're wearing.
Yep. So the one I'm reviewing today is Houston, which is about the fashion designer Houston. It's written, produced, and directed by Frederick Ching, and he did Valentino, The Last Emperor. Dior and I was his first film that he directed, and he co-directed Deanna Vreeland, The Eye Has to Travel. So he's done a lot of fashion films, and he's like a photographer and filmmaker. And this movie is kind of done in an interesting way because it is a documentary, but they've got Tavi Jefferson from Style Rookie.
Oh, okay.
Is this kind of fictional character that's narrating the story it's kind of a little bit weird. Like, I had to, you know, watched it a couple of times and I was like, oh, this is kind of, and it's kind of trying to fill in the gaps, I guess, to give you a bit more background.
So it's a documentary with a semi-fictional narrator.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so what the director's trying to do is create kind of like a business thriller, like encouraging the audience to kind of become part of the investigation behind Halston, and who hid his past from the press, you know, much like Coco Chanel and stuff like that.
He gave Jackie Kennedy her signature pillbox hat.
Yeah.
That's red.
Yeah, she wore it to the inauguration of
JFK.
Yeah, and she, like everyone else, was wearing mink furs and, and, like, you know, these other crazy hats, and she had the, it was actually like a button hat, but it was blowing, it was so windy that she put her hand on it and put a dent in it, and so everyone copied it with
so
a dent
funny.
In it. But he started as a milliner for Bergdorf Goodman, which is kind of like the Smith & Coe's, but very high-end.
Massive American Smith & Coe's.
Yeah, and then he decided that he was going to become more of a designer, like, generally, and he was quite famous for Ultra Suede. He made an Ultra Suede shirt. He also, everything...
What is Ultra Suede?
Yeah,
is it
I
just
was
like,
ask that too.
Is it, like, very suede? I don't know.
I think, I actually don't know. I think it's kind of like a fake suede.
Okay. Right.
We're talking about like kind of the 70s.
Yeah.
Early 60s going into the 70s.
Got you.
And he ended up kind of cutting all his clothing on the bias. So it was all, you know, if you think of like Miss Crabbe, Fleetwood Mac dress, that's cut on the bias.
Okay.
You know, the witch's dress is cut on the bias. So it's got that movement. Mm.
Is that when you cut against
the grain
of the...
Isn't it a diagonal seam across?
Yeah.
Okay, so it sort of swings when you move a little bit as well.
Yeah.
It's got quite a recognisable look. If you don't think you know what a bias cut is, Google it and you'll be like, oh, I have a shirt or I have a dress that's cut like that. Yeah.
It's very flattering.
Yes.
Like very much like shapes.
And it's very, that thing about movement. You know, we're talking about the 70s where people were trying to, you know, become, I guess, a little bit freer from the 60s constraints of, you know, the box cut jackets
fitted
clothing. And so, and he became quite famous quite quickly. And he also invented the hot pant.
Nice.
Like little tiny shorts.
Short shorts.
Nice.
What an absolute
He's
iconic thing to have to your name.
I guess the... Liza Minnelli only wore Halston. She was like one of his best friends, and he always surrounded himself by with very, I don't know, kind of extroverted people that really helped his company. He was a very publicity and marketing savvy guy, and I don't, like, I had heard of him but didn't really know much about him, but the film is very fascinating. Like, it's a really good insight into his rise and his subsequent downfall, because he was the first designer to collaborate with you know, say, like, we'd say like a Rendles, which is JCPenney in the States. And he went from described it as from class to mass.
Right.
But in an American accent, that rhymes.
Class,
you know?
To mass.
Yeah. And he basically
apologies
got...
to any Americans who just had to hear me say that.
He basically got dropped by all, like, the Bergman... Bergdorf Goodman stores, like,
okay, because he was a bit tacky now or something.
Yeah, but actually what he wanted to do was he wanted to actually dress all Americans, you know, so he actually had a really good fundamental kind of ethic behind it. He was trying to make everyone feel like they could, like,
they could
dress well and be fashionable.
So this was kind of part of like the rise of what we would know as fast fashion now a little bit though, is that right? That kind of like sort of mass produced, mass accessible kind of clothes.
Well, I guess that was always there, but it's that thing of like a you know, a high-end designer like collaborating
with a mainstream brand
that was considered to be quite low rent, you know, and people like just were, I don't know, I guess it would be like, say, if Karen Walker collaborated with The Warehouse or something,
right,
you know, which like is not a bad thing, but in those days, like we're talking like 1982, that was horrific, you know. And he was like, he had some really businesses, like a big business corporation, kind of bought him out. And in the end, he had signed away all the rights to his name.
Far out.
And lost everything,
that's,
basically.
Oh, my God. Kind of, yeah, total rise and fall story. It sounds like I loved Dior and I, which is, what's this director's name again? Frederick Cheng. I really loved Dior and I. And it had that, like, speedy pace. It had the kind of tension throughout the whole movie. Does this kind of live up to that sort of, I guess if you were saying that it's trying to be like a business thriller, does it kind of live up to that pace?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't want to kind of, like, put the too many spoilers in there, but it definitely, I mean, it's only 106 minutes long, but I was not bored at all.
Right.
You know, and there were some fascinating things that he did, especially with marketing. His salesperson was Pat Ast, who was a Warhol superstar, who was a larger lady, and people vilified him for having her, but she was the best salesperson ever.
Right.
You know, and I think he just was out there and very forward-thinking and very modern, and I think that just enthralls her, you know.
Yeah. So definitely highly recommended film then?
Yeah, it's got three more screenings, and I believe, one sold out, which is next Saturday at 12:15, but you can go and see it on Friday at 10:30 a.m., next Monday at 11:45 a.m., or for those that work, Saturday the 3rd of August at 1 p.m, and that's at the ASB Waterfront Theatre. And I guess just go to the NZIFF website, and the movie's called Helston.
Helston. Fantastic. Thank you very much, Penny.
Thanks.
You've been listening to B-Movies, thanks to Mezzo Bar.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.